Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us. Training camp is underway. The players have all reported. A few players addressed the media. We'll recap that. Coach Ben McAdoo also just recently addressed the media. So let's get a few interesting nuggets out there. Number one, two players are going to start training camp on the PUP list, the physically unable to practice list, and that is running back Sean Drone. He's dealing with an ankle injury. Cornerback Valentino Blake dealing with a back injury. All 90 players reported, Paul, so that is certainly a positive. Just those two are the ones dealing with injuries. There were a few other guys that had been nursing some injuries over the course of training camp, not over the course of training camp, over the course of OTAs and minicamp, but it seems like they'll be all ready to go.
Nothing said at all about Geno Smith, who had a knee. Nothing said about JT Thomas, who also had a knee. Nothing also said about Darian Thompson, who earlier in the spring had been dealing with a bit of a sore foot, had he had been coming back off of what had happened to him last year. So those three guys, not PUP. So Coach McAdoo did hint, didn't mention them by name, but hinted that there may be some guys limited. We're going to see how it goes, and did not wish to elaborate. You could probably sniff it out that those guys are probably the three he was talking about, but don't want to make any assumptions.
But certainly a positive development that none of those players are going to start on the PUP list.
PUP is one category that's definitive. PUP, you don't practice, case closed, you're on the side. Limited is always a good thing because that means the trainers are saying you can do something out there on the practice field. You have the ability to gain knowledge and experience and take coaching from the guys out on the practice field. That's a good step.
Now, as far as the schedule is concerned, Coach McAdoo talked about what to expect during training camp. He mentioned they're going to have a few more off days this season. Hydration is important. Recovery time, that seems to be a big part of the emphasis as we start up training camp here.
Yeah, he said they were going to make some improvements, and I kind of talk about them as tweaks because you don't know if they're improvements unless they're effective, and you can't know that until after the season is over. But be that as it may, I understand his point. There'll be differences in how they mentally rest and how they physically rest, in their nutrition. All these little things they've done some tweaking on, thinking that that will help get them over the top. And so, we move on from here. We will see some of these things, I suppose. Some of them will be behind the scenes that nobody will see.
Subtle.
Other things, we may see a little bit of a difference with our own eyes as the Giants continue to progress forward.
Well, we didn't see this, but Coach McAdoo mentioned that when he addressed the team for the first time, he worked in some literature.
Yes.
And he read a poem by Rudyard Kipling to the group entitled If. I actually just brought up the poem. We'll see whether or not Paul Dottino will recite the entire poem before the show wraps up. But that was something that...
No.
you're already shying away from it?
I'm not a poet.
You're not a poet?
I'm a screamer.
Okay. Well, you could scream a poem. That's possible. You could have the combination of both. But
is that allowed?
Yeah, I think it's allowed, depending
I thought poets had to be... nice and
it
demure.
Depends on the topic
have
of the poem.
A zen kind of attitude.
Well, I think it depends on the poem. If the poem is low key, calls for
here's
that.
Here's the point of the poem. He said that he's got a ton of guys who are 25, 26 years and under on this team. And when he read the poem himself back in June during minicamp, it left a dramatic impact on him as to the younger crowd and the mission that they are undertaking. And that's what the poem is about. I haven't read it yet. We just hustled in here after talking to the coach to get on for you guys. So I haven't read the poem yet, but I understand the gist of what he was saying. And the hope is that the players are somewhat motivated, take it to heart, and understand the seriousness of what it is that they're about to entertain.
Yeah, part of that was him talking about, you just alluded to this, there's a disparity in terms of the age on the team. You have guys
that
are 21 all the way to 36. So he wants to find a way for everybody to sort of come together as they begin training camp. And the poem was supposed to tie that in based on the themes and the principles in this work of literature. All right, the players also addressed the media. Let's go over a few things that jumped out to us about what the players said. The first thing to me was Snack spoke to the media, Paul, and he mentioned that he's looking to get more sacks this season. Now, he had 2.5 last year.
Correct.
So to put that in perspective, because I think this easily gets overlooked, that was a career high for him.
Yes.
He only had 1.5 sacks in his first four seasons in the NFL with the Jets. He wound up coming through with 2.5 in his first season with the Giants. So Snacks has already, to me, made an indentation, or at least a noticeable statement to the fans as well as the team that he can get to the quarterback as well as stop the run. Now he wants to see those numbers jump up a tad.
Well, I think, you know, and by the way, he would not say what his new goal
is.
Correct.
He didn't say his target.
But I think if you're thinking Snacks is a run-stopping defensive tackle first, I think a very modest number would be 5 or 6. Because, quite frankly, Freddie Robbins, when he was playing defensive tackle for the Giants during their previous Spagnuolo era when they won the Super Bowl, Freddie had consecutive years. In fact, I think it was 3 or 4 in a row where he had 5 or 5.5 sacks. And that was considered really good. Hankins had 7.5 a couple of years ago.
But then it went down to 0. Now, right. Part of that was he was hurt, but
yes.
It fluctuated with
but the 7.5 put him, I think, top 5 or maybe even top 3 amongst defensive tackles in the league that year in sacks. So I think that's a little bit of a lofty number. I think 5 or 6 is a very reasonable, realistic number. I don't know what Snacks has in mind. Again, he wouldn't tell us. But clearly that was the point of emphasis that he made when the reporters pressed him on how can you play better? You already made the Pro Bowl or made All-Pro, not the Pro Bowl.
He didn't get
that trip, did he? No vacation for him.
The All-Pro is more important, though, when you look at him.
Yes,
resume.
It is.
Yes, but he did not make the Pro Bowl. I would agree with you. I think, listen, if he could double his production in terms of sacks from last season to this season, I think that's a wonderful gift for the Giants because that's unfound production that you're not anticipating.
The Giants had 35 sacks last season. I'm strongly of the belief that in a 16-game year, you need approximately 42, 43 sacks to, and again, understanding, we all know this, hurries, quarterback hits, all that stuff is just as important, if not sometimes more important than the sacks. I understand all of that. You guys know, I preach that. The intangibles, the other factors, don't just go to the sack numbers, you analytics folks, because that doesn't tell the whole story. But I will say, if you want to target a number as a team, low 40s is really the number you want to be a bona fide playoff team. They only had 35 last year, yet they were able to do it. So it can be done if you're in the 30s, but you'd certainly like to get into the low 40s if you can.
Well, and with Spags' defensive system, if you could also spread the wealth within that 40, meaning it's not just one guy doing all the heavy lifting, but you have a bunch of guys, that means that the rotation is working effectively.
Well, the Giants didn't have a double-digit sack guy last season. And you'd hope that JPP or Vernon or maybe both can do that this year. Of course, JPP missed a month because of the groin at the end of the season. And now Snacks wants to get more. Is 40 out of the question? Not at all.
I don't think it's out of the question. The two of them combined, JPP and Vernon, had 15.5 last season. Vernon led the team with 8.5, and then JPP, as you mentioned, had 7 before he missed the final quarter of the season. So JPP, if he could play all 16 games, Vernon now fully healthy without the wrist injury, it's certainly not a stretch to say that they can at least toy with perhaps getting double digits. Staying on the defensive side of the ball, Eli Apple also spoke to the media. Eli said that he's going to try to play at about 202 in terms of his weight. That's nothing new. He had talked about that during minicamp as well as OTAs. But there was something else that jumped out to you, Paul, about what at least Eli Apple mentioned when he spoke to reporters.
Well, he talked about the comfort zone and how he is much more comfortable, much more confident. He has been through this before now as a rookie. He talked about a little bit of anticipating passes better. Like at the end of the season last year, the last month or so, he started getting his hand on more passes. And that was because he was reading the plays a lot quicker and a lot earlier.
Could be more aggressive. You're more comfortable.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting. And, of course, he really put a high, lot of high praise on DRC, not only because of what he brings to the table, but because of his versatility, saying, hey, he's terrific in the slot, but we know if one of us guys get dinged on the outside, he goes to the outside, and he really helps our secondary immensely.
He also got a new haircut. That's just a minor side note.
I'm not.
I know everybody in the media was focusing on that. I know that's not Paul Tatino's
cup of
tea. That's
good for TMZ.
But
that's
I figured at least I'd throw that out and mention that. On the offensive side of the ball, Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg, two offensive linemen, both addressed the media. And the big theme was continuity, about the fact that there's a good chance the 5 starters are going to come back. This will be maybe hopefully their second straight season of all being in the same spots. That seemed to be the big theme in terms of all the offensive linemen that spoke.
Yes, Justin Pugh also mentioned maturity as a big key for this group. And I will tell you, many years ago, Carl Nelson, who played on the Super Bowl 21 team, my broadcast partner as one of the guys on our Giants radio crew for many years, always said to me, and it was a different era in those days. Now, remember, Lance, there was no salary cap. and free agency was a totally different ball game. Carl always said to me, and he was the right tackle, remember, leading Joe Morris around that end. Carl said, I really believe it takes four seasons. You're not until maybe your fourth season as an offensive line, if you can stay together.
The unit.
To where, as a unit,
yeah,
you guys really reach your potential as an offensive line. Now, of course, again, the problem with that statement is that it's very hard to keep five guys together on your offensive line for four consecutive years, given the current rules
of
the CBA and free agency.
Well,
it's almost impossible to do.
Well, and aside from the financial restrictions, there's then the health issue, too. For everybody to stay healthy for 4 years.
Pugh missed five games last year, and he talked about how he's going to improve his nutrition to try to stay on the field for the whole season.
So that was basically the two themes with respect to excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I'm getting so emotional over
And that's okay, because I'm excited too.
Yes.
It's okay, Lance. You can get pumped up for this.
I think I've regrouped. I'm okay.
It's day one,
yes.
Folks.
Well, you balance out the energy for all of us, the entire Giants Nation, as I like to say. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines.
No, you're forgetting somebody.
I'm forgetting
Sterling
somebody.
Shepard.
Who am I forgetting?
He's a short guy like you.
Shepard.
That doesn't mean we can't see him.
My apologies. Yeah, Shepard did address the media
as
well. Yes, and he talked about also comfort in the system now that he's entering the second year.
His top priority going into this season is yak yardage, yards after the catch. He believes that he's got to do a better job of making bigger plays after catching that ball from Eli. And, hey, who's going to argue with that? That's not a bad thing at all.
Well, now he's got plenty more weapons around him, too. So we'll see whether or not that could open up some more opportunities for him as well as the rest of his teammates. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. All right, training camp well underway. Everything up for discussion on the docket here. Let's open up the lines. We've got Dave in Cranford. He gets us started. Dave, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing all right, Dave.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
Good. Hey, it's great to see you guys, and it's an exciting time of the year. Hey, I wanted to mention something Paul's talked about a couple times, and that is just kind of how the Giants are perceived going into the season. And the funny part is, I actually think it's pretty positive, and I just wanted to kind of get your opinion on this. I think the Giants, for whatever reason, I'm not sure exactly why, but they seem to, you know, often be you know, misconstrued in the national media. So when I see people predicting them to win 9 or 10 games, you know, going into the season, I think about that as 10 or 11, because I think there's a game or two that are just biased against the Giants for some reason. And I look at this season going into the season, and I think we're getting a lot of attention and a lot of love. I think we deserve it, but at the end of the day, I think that we have a lot of hope going into the season, and I just wanted to kind of get your guys' thoughts on that.
I'm just going to address this in two ways. Vegas is the Giants is 20-1 to win the Super Bowl, and that's second on their odds chart in the division to the Dallas Cowboys. I don't necessarily think that's a lot of love at all, but that's just my opinion. I will tell you this. They won 11 games last year, and the schedule this season is a lot tougher. Now, it's a better roster. Yes. Should they be as healthy as they were last year, fingers crossed, that certainly gives them a chance to match that 11-win season. But they're going to have to play better than they did last year to win 11 games again. The schedule is that difficult. So, you know, I don't know what win total we're going to see out of this team. I'm not going to predict that till we get to week one of the regular season. I wait till the end of training camp. But know that it's going to take a lot of elbow grease to get to 11-5 again.
Well, they also had a three-game stretch last season at home right after the bye, after they went to London. I think that helped. That really was a huge turning point if you go back to last season. This season, you got four West Coast road trips. They are spread out, but that's a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. And that does, you know, wear on you over the course of a season.
Look, the travel, the NFC East is tough,
of course.
They're playing the AFC West, which is the second
division.
Best division in football. Those are three reasons why it's going to be a struggle to get 11 wins.
Yeah, you have to take
that
into consideration.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, can I ask you one other question? You've done a great job, and we've talked a couple times before this, where you've talked about how football comes down to the matchups. And I think, you know, you've made a great point, and I think it's really true about how the Giants match up against Dallas. And I think, ironically, I just think that we – you know, both offensively and defensively match up well against them. My question is, as you look at at the Dallas schedule, my concern isn't the Giants as they match up against Dallas this year. My concern is how Dallas matches up against other teams going into the season. And so I've looked at it two ways when I look at their schedule. One is, what are the defenses that can stand up and use the framework that the Giants are going to show and have shown the league on how to beat the Cowboys? What teams do you think can replicate that? I think it's Denver, Seattle, maybe Arizona. I think those teams, Kansas City, I think those teams defensively can match up against the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. I think consecutively, I think there's three teams that Dallas is going to play this year, Green Bay, Atlanta, and Oakland, that are going to feast on their secondary just the way I think we will. So because I think Dallas, still remains a big obstacle to us to win the division, how can you talk about how you see them matching up against in their schedule a little bit? I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
I think they're going to have a tough time with the Cardinals in week three, okay? And I could certainly see them having a tough time with the Packers in week five in what is a playoff rematch, okay? If you're the Giants, you'd love nothing more than Dallas to come out of the gate at 1-4 with losses to the Giants, Broncos, Cardinals, and Packers and only beating the Rams. That would be a dream case scenario for Dallas to be 1-4 out of the gate by the time they get to their bye. I will say this, and I've said this 1,000 times. If you've listened to the show, I'm sorry, it's going to bore you. But Dallas has as many as 6 new defensive starters on their team who did not start the playoff game at the end of last season. It will take them, history tells us, till the middle of October before their defense has any semblance of what it is that they're supposed to do. And so I believe that they're going to be involved in a lot of situations where their offense is going to have to single-handedly win games in the first month of the season. And when you talk about those kind of opponents that I just mentioned, the Giants, the Broncos, the Cardinals, and the Packers, those are playoff teams, okay? All 4 of those playoff teams, if they take care of their business and they're maxing out and playing like they're supposed to, they could beat Dallas. And Dallas is then 1-4 going into the bye, and you got to love that because they will only get better as the season goes on.
The thing about Seattle and Arizona, though, let's not forget, their secondaries are much more effective than their run defenses. So to go back to the initial caller, the caller's question was more about, what defenses could give Dallas problems. And although Seattle is one of the best defenses in the NFL, let's not forget that the Cowboys have actually had quite some success against running the football against that Seattle defense. If you go back and you look at the last few regular season matchups, DeMarco Murray had a big game in Seattle. I think that was about maybe 2-3 years ago. And then they had a very low-scoring game in Dallas when Romo got hurt, but they were able to run the football with Darren McFadden in that game.
See, the thing that makes it hard for me to talk about Seattle is that they're playing them in Week 16.
Oh, a lot could change, of
all right,
course.
17-week season, 16 games, 1 week for
no
the
doubt.
Bye.
Yeah.
They're playing them so far down the road, you don't know what either team is going to actually be in December. But you pretty much have an idea now, although the 53s aren't set, what a team's going to be in September. You got a better idea of what a team's going to be in September than they are going to be in November or December. That I can say. And so to me, the NFC should just be banging the drums and hope that the Cowboys get off to a rough start. Because if they could steal some wins in September, it's going to be hard to keep them from winning 10 games. Okay? That's the whole key for me.
Slow starts, it's hard to make up for that, especially late in the season. But if you do go based on what you're talking about and you're just worried about the early season matchups, once again, if you're trying to project a team that's going to give Dallas trouble, it has to be a team that's very stingy in stopping the run. Because even if they have some questions on defense, what Dallas has been able to do effectively over the last few years is pound the football, run the clock, and save their defense by limiting the defensive snaps and keeping those guys on the sidelines. So the teams that you're looking for are the teams that are effective in stopping the run. And I'm looking at the first few matchups for the Cowboys. Arizona was hit and miss last season. We'll see if they bounce back. I think they will, but they were very hit or miss in terms of the run. The Rams, even though they've got a good front, they were much more effective in getting to the quarterback than stopping the run last season. If you look at those numbers, Denver and the Giants, to me, are the two most imposing run defenses.
No question.
That Dallas has to face if we just look at the first quarter of the
season.
But
see, I don't like your equation because I think, as I said, Dallas's defense is very suspect. I think they've got a Kleenex tissue kind of pass rush, and I don't think very much of their secondary. So that says to me any team that's got a very high potent passing offense has a chance to beat them on the scoreboard because you're going to ask Dak and Elliott and the rest of those guys who would much rather run the ball now to keep up with those offenses in a track meet. And I don't think they can.
Well, in terms of giving up big plays. But let's also not forget this, and this is why, you know, we get caught up in looking at defenses on paper and making jumps and assumptions. The two Giants-Cowboys games last year, and Dallas had a lot of issues in terms of its secondary, Paul, were low-scoring affairs. Let's not forget about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody projects, oh, this is going to be a bad secondary. They're going to light it up. Both games are extremely low-scoring, which means I'm going more at whether or not you could stop the run because the run game dictates so much on offense and defense. If you run the football on offense, you now win the time of possession. You can put together long, sustainable drives, and you're also resting your defense.
That's
it
the plan.
It has to start there.
That's
you
the
have
plan.
To be able to
That's
stop
what
the Dallas,
Dallas is going to try to do. That's what they should do. That's the smartest way to go. But if they can't make that happen, I think they're in some quicksand in September. I really do. Look, I would be surprised if they don't make the playoffs, and I've said that before. I don't think the Cowboys are making the playoffs.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening, fellas?
Hi. All right, Nick. What do you got for us?
All right. Just I've been listening to you guys all week. I've been trying to call. It's been really busy. You know, I haven't been able to get through, like, when you guys were asking questions and you were talking about, you know, bold predictions and stuff. But now I'm talking to you. So I agree with you with the, you know, you were saying Paul Perkins – like having a breakout year, second year, you know?
You could.
Lance.
But yeah.
I'm looking at a couple other guys, and especially this guy, you know, because he reminds me of, you know, Landon Collins, his first year, you know, missed opportunities, and then he finally got that pick, you know, and he settled down a little bit, even though he wasn't in his comfort zone. He wasn't playing where he should be. But Eli Apple, he had the same thing, and I think this year you're going to see this kid really shine, you know?
Well, listen, you're playing with DRC and Janoris Jenkins. Landon Collins is back.
There you
they
go.
May just have one new face at safety. The secondary is intact. That's good
and
news
another
for
guy,
everybody.
Darian
veterans
Thompson,
and young guys.
If he stays healthy, there's another guy. There's my bold prediction. Him, B.J. Goodson, and Dalvin Tomlinson, they're all going to start. Maybe not week one, but by week two or three, those will be your three starters, and that defense is going to be scary then, you know?
Well, if Dalvin Tomlinson could start by midway through the season, which I think is a fair goal, I mean, that's a positive sign in terms of his development because mm-hmm. you do want to see a player who's young adjust to the defense early on and then earn the coaching staff's confidence that they can throw him into the fire by midway through the season. If you go back and you look at what Jonathan Hankins and Linval Joseph did, their rookie campaigns, they played a lot more later on in the season than they did early in the season. They were mainly special teams guys. So, you know, I'm assuming that Dalvin Tomlinson will be following a similar path. That doesn't mean he's going to play the same amount of reps, but I think that's a fair projection, Paul, if you're looking at the outlook for Tomlinson.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything illogical about that at all.
I mean, I wanted, I'm not optimistic. I think he's, you know, He could have gone to Harvard for, you know.
Yeah, well, you said that. Absolutely.
I mean, I think he's going to understand the playbook, like, really quick. That's why I think he'll be in there sooner. But I'm optimistic. I don't want to say week one. You know, I'm a guy that's here in reality. And what you just said is very, very true. They don't want to just throw the guys in a fire unless they're Lawrence Taylor.
Just remember one thing. Lance is a smart guy, too, but he doesn't hit anybody.
He's the
very true. Yes. Well, at least it hasn't been documented yet, but yeah.
Thanks for the call.
But listen, guys, one thing I wanted to say, you know, I want to say all kinds of things, but I want to watch them hit first. And
exactly.
Do they put pads on next week, guys?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to come out, and I hope it's a day like today. You know, it's nice and cool like the days we've had, you know, the last few days. No rain, really, but nice and cool. Hopefully it's like that. But whenever, with all that being said, we talk about Odell Beckham a lot, you know, and they criticize, and, you know, I'm one of them, you know, but I do that on the field, you know, dropping the catch in the Green Bay game. But I think what you guys put on there, the only other people that I heard talk about it, about him going down to Texas and visiting that kid, you know, with, you know, unfortunate situation down there that he has, I thought that was great. And you don't see enough of that,
right.
You know.
Yep.
You should see more of that. And you guys put that out there. And I think Boomer and Carlton, I heard it on the radio. Other than that, I didn't see nothing about it. And you should see more of that because this guy, you know, he didn't have to go do that. But this kid loves Odell Beckham, and he went down there and he took his time and helped the guy, you know, the kid out, you know, made him have a great day, you know. So I just want to say, you know, we all criticize, but the guy, you know, the guy has a heart. And let's hope – I think he's becoming mature, and I don't want to put my foot in my mouth, but – This showed me something with him that, you know, that's great. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
It's the other side of things, and we want to let you go just because we want to get to a few more calls. Just for people that may not have understood what Nick was referring to, Weston Richburg addressed the media today and mentioned he had established a relationship with a young kid, unfortunately, that is dealing with cancer in Texas, and the kid is a big fan of Odell Beckham.
Not even 10 years old, I believe.
Correct. They reached out to Beckham, and Beckham surprised the child by coming down to Texas to visit him, and Richburg reflected on that experience and said, unfortunately, the child is not doing very well. They don't think that he can even maybe attend a Giants game this season, but certainly a really nice, warm story that you don't necessarily hear about.
No, you know, Richburg was asking us to send prayers to the child and his family because, the arrow's not looking good right now, but, you know, for him to be part of that child's life, you could see it affected him. And it obviously affected Beckham enough that he made an appearance. And apparently he had to go, like, across the country on a pretty quick notice, and there were a bunch of people who helped make it happen transportation-wise. There were a lot of strength that had to get pulled to make this happen and a lot of effort. You know, this wasn't something that was just done on a whim. This was a very important thing to the family, to his friends, and obviously to Richburg and to Odell Beckham.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Jerry Reese is addressing the media at 1, so we're going to end slightly early. That's why I want to try to get in as many calls as possible. Dennis is in Charlotte. Dennis, what's happening?
Yeah, hi, fellas. I'm glad you take my call.
Hi.
You got it, Dennis. What do you have for us?
Well, I just wanted to with Paul there, he goes back a few days. I just wanted to say a quick thing how I played football in the Marine Corps. And I played with and against one of the fellas that went to school with Paul.
Okay.
Maybe you know him, Paul. Bernie Wheelwright.
Bernie Wheelwright. I do not know the name. Should I?
Yeah. Well, well, he played with the Giants, I think, in 65, 66.
Well, I didn't go to school. How old do you think I am?
I'm only kidding.
Fordham Rose Hill, class of 86. Okay? I'm not an early 60s college grad now. Come on. Do I look 95 to you?
Dennis, it would have been much more effective if you named one of Frank Gifford's teammates, too.
Marines.
I'm sure Paul's very familiar with that as well.
Yeah, he played for the Quantico Marines, and I played for Camp Lejeune. Well, anyway.
Thank you for your service, for sure.
And another guy that doesn't get too much credit with the tight ends of the past, who I thought was a great tight end, Aaron Thomas.
Yes. Aaron Thomas and Joe Walton were the first true tight ends in Giants history back in the early 60s. And, you know, unfortunately, Thomas had a big drop in a key game, which, you know, we won't really talk about. But, yeah, he was a quality player and certainly a big threat in the passing game. Joe Walton, same thing. I mean, Tittle loved Joe Walton. So, hey, great to go down memory lane with you. You sure it wasn't Ernie Wheelwright? Not Bernie. I thought it was Ernie Wheelwright.
No, Ernie Wheelwright, yeah. And
just saying.
Because I have his football card that I picked up after I got out. Well, anyway, I just want to commend you guys. You did a great job, Paul, in defending Odell when all the media was on him for not attending the mini camps.
Well, I just told you the truth.
That is not mandatory.
I just told you the truth. Please understand.
And you defended, hey, you know, it's not
No,
it's not
no.
mandatory. So there's a lot of guys that didn't go to camp.
I wasn't defending Odell Beckham. I was simply telling the truth. I was not interested in headlines. I was not interested in hype and propaganda and clickbait. I simply told you the truth. That's what you're going to get out of me. I'm Italian, okay? You're going to get in your face the truth every time. That's all.
I know.
I'm not looking for plaudits for defending the player. I simply told you the truth.
Yes, well, in his defense, he was telling the truth. So sometimes the truth hurts, you know?
sometimes, contrary to what a lot of media would like to tell you, the truth is the best story.
All right, Dennis, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for
weighing
in.
All right, thank you. Thanks for taking my call,
they,
guys.
Just looked in the archives. It is Ernie Wheelwright. He played for the Giants 64-65. So you were right. It's not Bernie, it's Ernie. There you go.
I mean, but I didn't go to school with him.
No, but you were having dreams of what he could do when he put on that Giants uniform.
I know there's this perception, okay? There is this perception that I was like high school buddies with Charlie Connolly. I understand that, okay? I understand that, but it's not true.
Well, I'm glad you set the record straight because the segment of our audience that felt that way, they were on the edge of their seat. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Ken in New Jersey. Ken, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hello, Ken.
Hey, fellas, how you doing? Hey, Paul, how was the Great Depression? Were you around for that?
You know, can you tell I'm just a little excited today? It's day one.
I've got a quick question and a bold prediction. I wanted to know what's the most passing yards Eli's had in a single season, and my bold prediction will be he'll surpass that by 200 yards this season. Is that bold enough?
I want to say it's about 4,300, Lance.
I'm bringing it up right now. In terms of his high for a single season, let's see here. Eli Manning, over the course of his career, the
46?
High is 2011. He had 4,933.
He did get that much one time.
Okay.
So if you think he's going to get 200 more yards, then we're talking about over 5,000 yards.
Well, remember now, that was the season where the Giants were last in the NFL in rushing. Okay, found a semblance of a periodic rushing attack down the stretch and into the postseason, and that's how they eventually won the Super Bowl. I don't want Eli throwing for 5,000 yards.
Well, also, the 2011 season was the season when the Giants had to put together all those comebacks. They were constantly throwing in the fourth quarter.
No question.
If you remember, that's a big reason why his numbers were padded.
No, you don't want him throwing for that much. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think you want more balance, especially since they're yearning for a much more balanced running attack this season, as opposed to just Eli's arm.
All right, I'll try a new one then. I'll say Beckham and Paul Perkins both have a 1,000-yard season. The Paul Perkins one is the one I'm iffy about, but I think Paul Perkins won't have 1,000 rushing. He'll have 1,000 combined rushing and receiving yards.
I think that's highly likely.
Yeah,
well, then it's not bold enough.
Perkins to me could get to 1,000 combined, depending on how well he does on the ground and also how much he's involved in the receiving game. Remember, Shane Vereen's return to me is that X factor.
Yeah.
About how many receptions, how many targets he's going to get. I don't think it's that much of a stretch if Perkins really is that much of a balanced and flashy player this season. All right, Ken.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you
got all right, thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate the phone call.
Have
thanks so much. You got it. All right, let's hear from Billy in Arlington, Texas. Billy, what's happening? Billy, are you there?
I just wanted to throw out. I'm from Rochester, so
okay.
Being stuck in Texas, getting to listen to you guys is pretty awesome.
Well, thanks for tuning in. So
glad you take the time.
Yeah, I have a question, and it may be a little premature, but there's a fullback. I believe his name is Sean Smith.
Shane Smith.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
What do you guys know about him? Because I was looking at him on online. It's hard to look at the stats for a fullback for me, but he's huge. You know, and I was thinking, is that going to be possibly that kind of goal line, you know, break the line kind of guy?
6'2", 247, he looks like the Incredible Hulk. But you know what? Until we see him out here in pads and in contact and actually carrying the ball, there's no way to tell because his attempts in college, we talked about this yesterday, between receptions and carries, he didn't even have, I think, 35 touches in his college career at San Jose State. So, you know, he's a total unknown in terms of being able to produce with the ball in his hands. I tend to think the Giants probably feel that with the additional blocking from Ellison, and Lacoste can do some of that stuff as well out of the H-back spot. As much as I'd love to see a fullback on this team, I think they're going to probably wind up feeling, right now, my guess is a fourth tight end is going to be more valuable to keep than what the fullback might be able to bring to the table. We're not talking about Charles Way here, you know? That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about an undrafted rookie free agent who barely touched the ball in college.
Yeah, Shane Smith, yeah. He had 8 rushes during the course of his 4-year career at San Jose State, 21 receptions. So if you do the math, he did not have a lot of touches over the course of his collegiate career. So to say that he's going to come in and be a huge part of the offense, I think we're going to have to see it first before we anticipate that that's going to be a big role for him.
I would not object if he turns out, you know, if you said to me, you know, he's got a good chance to make the practice squad.
Yeah.
I would not bet against that. I certainly would not. But
yeah, I can see that being pretty helpful for the defense.
Could be.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on their view of Rhett Ellison. If they think Rhett Ellison could be a fullback slash tight end, then clearly there's not going to be a reason to keep another fullback on the roster,
right?
Because he can be used in a versatile role.
Exactly.
So a lot of that is going to depend on how they utilize Ellison moving forward.
Sure. Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
All right, Billy.
All right, guys. Well, thank you.
You got it. Appreciate
the
phone call. Thanks so much. Let's hear from Rick in Florida. Rick, welcome to the program. What do you got?
It's Vic.
Vic.
How many times are you going to say,
well,
Vic?
Well, Vic, here's the thing. You got to be clear. The problem is, it may not be us. It may not be us. You need to now reflect on whether or not you're enunciating correctly when you speak to our phone call screeners, okay?
I told her.
Vic, you want me to throw our group under the bus. I'm not willing to go there. I think you need to take the brunt of the blame here, okay? It's the start of training camp. You need to bring your A game here, okay? We expect you to be
in
mid-season four.
I wish I was down there.
Well,
I got
I'm disappointed.
And a bold prediction.
What do you got, Vic?
The question, Paul, is as far as linebackers, you will know this. I don't think Lance would. Would you rather have a Devon Kennard, a Keenan Robinson, or a Casilla, those three? Or would you rather have a Brad Van Pelt, Brian Kelly, Gary Reasons?
Oh, I'm taking the old guys. Come on.
As if that's a shocker.
No, it's not too old.
Oh, look. Brad Van Pelt went to 5 Pro Bowls, okay? You could argue he's on that next shelf down right below the Hall of Famers, okay?
Okay.
So when
you
throw Brad Van Pelt at me, I don't even need to hear about Brian Kelly and Gary Reasons to tell you I'm taking that group. And that's not to disparage these guys. But Robinson, Kennard, Casillas, they're not going to Canton unless they buy a ticket. Brad Van Pelt,
guys,
number 10.
Listen, my bold prediction is this, okay? We're not going to have 4 blowouts, but we're going to have 2 blowouts, and both are going to be against the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
You may call me crazy, but that's it. Thank you for taking my call.
Wait, no, Vic. Before I let you go, okay, here's the procedure now when you call up the program. You go, I'm Vic as in Velcro, okay?
He's on that next shelf down.
Appreciate the phone call. Boy, he just put us on speaker and that was it.
He decided he wanted to replay the question off his computer.
I'm amazed. I was trying to give him a little tidbit. He's got to enunciate the letter, and he has to give us a word in which V is
utilized. We have literally about 5 minutes before we got to get to Jerry Reese. Let's move on.
Well, no, that we have some breathing room now, you see? You get so excited, and you're looking at the clock.
Hurry up offense, man. Let's go.
You will make the Jerry Reese presser, I can guarantee. We have about 17 people in the studio.
Snap
the
ball.
Snap
the ball.
You will be escorted to the Jerry Reese press conference. They are warming up a chair.
The blitz is coming. Snap the ball and get rid of it.
Well, let's get back to his bold prediction. We can at least react to that. Yesterday, the reason why Vic was reacting to that, by the way, just to give you context, is somebody called up and said that he thinks there's going to be 4 blowouts, which we thought was extremely
a
stretch, given the fact that you have a great deal of parity in the NFL. But let's go back to these Cowboys games, Paul. A lot of close games, no matter what season you're talking about.
Why do you think NBC insists on getting a Giants-Cowboys game every single season? Because they know it's going to be fun, it's going to be intense, it's going to be dramatic. They can't wait to get their hands on the Giants and Cowboys every year. And that's simply the way it's going to be. They've got the power, they want the game.
If you look at recent track record, the games have been more lopsided between the Eagles and the Redskins that you could pick and choose here or there over the last five seasons
yeah.
than the Dallas Cowboys. And that's a big reason why I keep saying everybody who analyzes rosters on paper and they're like, oh, this secondary is rough. Paper doesn't tell the whole story because a lot of these teams are familiar with one another, especially in the division. Dallas and the Giants, they know each other so well, even with the personnel changing in terms of the comfort level with scheme. So you can't overlook that.
Here's the thing. In recent years, and one of the callers before referred to how I talk about matchups a lot, as well as the Giants match up with Dallas, in recent years they haven't matched up with the Eagles. And so what happens? Giants play the Eagles. Ah, does not work out so well, does it? Well, guess what? Giants play Dallas. That does work out well. It's about the matchups. It's about your strengths against their weaknesses and vice versa. And, you know, if you look at the division, I still think in most cases the Giants do have favorable matchups against the teams in their division. The Eagles, they're kind of the one I'm not sure of because they have had some turnover. But maybe this is the year the Giants finally take care of that Philly jinx.
Pass rush, that's been the difference for the Eagles
over
the last few years.
It's been huge for them.
It's been a huge game changer in terms of why they've been so effective against the Giants. Let's check out Twitter here, hashtag Giants chat. For those of you weighing in that may have not been able to get to the phone line, Freddie at FreddieJ_23. Earlier we were talking about Vegas and the odds. Vegas is definitely not showing the Giants any love, in his opinion, because they have the Panthers at greater odds making the playoffs than the G-Men.
Greater odds or lesser odds?
That's according to what he said. I don't know. I have not.
I don't know
at
what
Vegas
the number.
Odds.
I don't know what
I'm
the numbers
exactly
are.
I'm not exactly sure where they have Carolina,
yeah.
But
I don't know.
I mean, is it that much of a stretch? Listen, Carolina getting Luke Kuechly back healthy. You've got Cam, who's been an MVP. I don't think it's crazy to think that the Panthers could very well get back to the playoffs this year. I mean, that's a very tough division, similar to the NFC East, where you can flip a coin to determine who's going to come out of that.
You would think they're going to be a bounce back team and be in the playoff conversation.
Let's head back to Twitter here to peruse some other thoughts. At Mark, former Chicago, he wants to know, can you see the MSG training camp live show out of market on Giants.com? I believe they are going to stream it on Giants.com.
I can't confirm that.
You can't confirm, but I'm pretty sure they've done that in the past, Mark, to answer your question.
At the very least, I think if it's not live, they'll have it up within an hour or two.
Correct. So if you check out the archive, at worst case scenario, that should be up. In terms of that programming, as well as plenty of other interviews and other features that we'll be putting up on the website, as well as highlights from practice, as the first practice will be tomorrow morning. We'll have Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow, but it's moving to a new time throughout the duration of training camp, 10 a.m. Eastern. So it will not be at noon throughout training camp. Starting tomorrow, it moves to 10 a.m. Eastern. So set your alarm clocks a little bit earlier. Make adjustments to your work
schedule.
Or
just don't sleep.
That's always an option. Paul Dottino has plenty of experience in that department. But we do want you to be well-rested for the program, so we're not necessarily recommending that as the school of thought heading into tomorrow's program. Any other thoughts before we head out to Jerry Reese's press conference?
I do have one other thought.
Yes.
All the players are here, which we've already confirmed. They're going to go out for conditioning drills. And we always have some fun because some of the overweight guys, you know, they always get their weight tested and stuff. They have some trouble every once in a while finishing off the drills, and their teammates kind of razz them and try to give them the business and stuff. So I'm kind of curious to see, does anybody get razzed and get the business today?
Well, that will be something to watch. Did you get your Nike 5 running yet today?
I got 4 miles in this morning. Had to cut the last mile short to get here. But I'm going for another 5 later. How about that?
The sacrifices that the talent puts forth here.
No. We'll get the number
You're
up.
Get it in?
We'll
right.
get the number up.
Well, somebody should videotape that so we can poke fun at that run.
Be here tomorrow, folks. It's free.
Yes, exactly. 10 a.m. Eastern, Big Blue Kickoff Live, up and running. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. You can continue to interact with us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Jerry Reese's press conference is going to start in about 5 minutes. That'll be up on Giants.com as well. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.